I'm Jan Suk Fong Lee.
And I'm Dina Del Bucchia.
And this is Can't Lit.
Can't Lit. Talk about books and stuff.
Welcome to the podcast. It's the holiday season. Do you like thinking about chestnuts in your nostrils? Same. Me too. That's how I get festive.
I feel so soothed all of a sudden. Is it Dina or is it Michael Bublé? Yeah. I don't know.
Listen, Michael Bublé, I'm ready for our very exciting duets album.
You guys can also rewrite Baby It's Cold Outside.
It's going to be called Del Bublé. It's going to be a great album.
Oh, it's going to be great.
It's going to be called Jingle My Nipples.
I was going to say jingle my perineum. Why not?
I love it. It's all great. It's all good. Jingle my nostrils. Shake those chestnuts out of there. Honestly, it would be quite painful, I think, to have a chestnut in your nose.
Chestnuts are big.
They're very big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want one of those in my nose.
No, me neither.
No. Not even a marble. Not even a marble. I made Dina a hot toddy. Everyone needs to know.
I'm drinking it right now. It's very warm and nice and citrusy.
Jen takes care of me. What are you all doing?
Come take care of Dina.
Come take care of me. Hi, Dina.
Hi, Jen. It's just me and Jen. And this is going to be our last episode of the year.
2019 can suck it.
Fuck you, 2019. And it will also be our last episode of the decade.
That's exciting.
So exciting.
Yeah.
How many end of year lists have you read? We're recording this on November 30th. I haven't really seen any.
The Globe 100 came out late yesterday, I think.
Oh, I did not see this.
So it's in the Saturday paper, today is Saturday. Mm-hmm. I looked at it online, but I just skimmed really quickly.
Right.
You know. Whatever. I hate those lists.
So it was like 100 of the year.
Yeah, there's no poetry titles.
You know
all
what?
Prose.
Globe and Mail. Next year, I only want to see poetry titles. I want to see 100 poetry titles.
Like of the year?
Of the year.
Would that not be all the poetry titles?
I don't give two fucks. This is rude.
Do 100 poetry titles get published in Canada anymore?
I'm sure they do.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
If we're counting like chapbooks.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Chapbooks.
You know,
yeah,
I think we could make a case for this.
Yeah. Why not? That'd be a great list.
I'm making a case right now. Mm. A case of poetry titles.
Also, I did note that on the Globe 100, because they do international titles, they did not include the book about Whitney Houston written by Robin Crawford. Ugh, and I think that's just a fucking travesty.
That's really rude.
I'm really hoping someone gets me this book for Christmas. It's all I want.
Is that all you want?
I want the Robin Crawford book about Whitney Houston.
I mean, it does seem really great.
I know Sanara Geisler, friend of the podcast, former guest, is with me on this one.
Yeah, she's definitely with you.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people want to read this book.
I want to read this book.
I'm into it.
It's all I want.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one book you want this holiday season.
That's all I want. I'm real highbrow. Real highbrow.
I've always said that about you. You're super highbrow. You are highbrow. I consider you very highbrow.
I can be highbrow, but if I was highbrow all the time, my brain would explode. No one can do this.
You gotta get low sometimes.
Yeah.
Keep it low.
So this is our last episode of the decade.
Mm-hmm.
So in this episode, we're reviewing the last decade in Canada.
Yeah, we'll talk about some stuff that's happened. I'm sure we'll interject with things. Before we get started, Jen, do you have anything going on right now? Do you have a what's happening at all?
My what's happening? Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what's happening is that Lindsay Wong, former guest, friend of the podcast. Dorella Lau, former guest, friend of the podcast.
Correct.
And I started a information and support group for emerging writers who identify as people of color, Black Indigenous people of color. And we made it into a Slack group, so it's online. And we invited established writers to also join so that they can help answer questions too. And it was just really important for us to create the space and everybody can talk and, you know, do what they need to do. And it's great. And we thought we'd get 20 people. 150 people later, it was insane.
It seems very unwieldy.
It's unwieldy, but not everyone's on it every day. And really, the questions are very they're no amorphous questions. They're very specific. Like, I just signed this contract. Now, what do I do? If I'm looking for Canada Council funding for a residency, does anyone else know how to do this? Like, they're very, like, specific. And I find those specific questions much easier to answer. You know, it's not like an amorphous, like, I wrote a novel, but I don't know if it's good. Like, that would be harder to answer. I mean, that question is valid.
It's a valid question.
But I don't want to answer it.
I don't know who has the answers. Yeah.
So it's been great, and I'm really pleased. And we have writers from across the country, people I don't know, which is great. So now we're getting to know everybody, and we're really happy with it.
That's awesome, and yeah. I really like that you're doing that.
Yeah, it was just, we'd had conversations that there's a lack in the industry and so much information and details. They're so specific, if you're a writer of color, just how to deal with what publishing is. What's happening with you, Dina?
What's happening? Oh, update for the listeners. I did get my little otter pouch back that had all my lip liners in it. It was at the sandbar, and I did lose it at the Penguin Random House party during the Vancouver Writers Festival.
I've lost many a thing at that party.
Yeah. And another update, I am wearing overalls today. They are denim.
They look comfy.
Yep. In honor of past guest and friend of the podcast, Andrea Bennett, who I believe owns these same ones. They got these same overalls. Yeah, and the only other thing that's really happened, I visited Daniel, a friend of the podcast, former host.
Former host!
In LA for his birthday. And yeah, it was really great. We rode a lot of roller coasters at Six Flags.
Yay!
Yeah. And we hung out with fun people, and I got to meet his dog, Lydia, who was very cool to me.
So are you and Lydia friends?
I don't know if we're friends. She seemed cool with me. I'll say that.
Okay. That's sometimes like, all you
know,
can ask.
Yeah. For. Like, I don't know if she's the kind of dog that has friends.
Okay.
You know?
Because, like, Rosie has very strong feelings about everybody.
Yeah.
She loves you or she fucking hates you. Sean Cranberry.
She's great. She's sorry, Sean. Sean, I hope you're getting the license for our event tonight. yeah. And I'm having a lot of stomach issues, but hopefully I'll have updates for you on that later on as well.
Well, I did get you like a lot of snacks.
Yeah, Jen got me a lot of snacks for a while. I couldn't eat, but now I need to be eating. So it's confusing and I'm going to keep doing stuff.
Gotta eat.
Will this be our most musical episode yet?
I actually have been thinking, like, I haven't mumble sung in a while, but
it might come over you.
I was mumble singing the Selena Gomez song, the new one, you know?
See, I don't know that song. I've never heard the song.
You need to hear it because it's really about Justin Bieber. So I thoroughly enjoy
it. Oh, I do want to hear that then.
There's this one line where she says, I think she sings, it's something like he wrote a song that was so beautiful and performed so beautifully, but then he sang off key in my chorus, like in my song, like almost like he's trying to sabotage her career. And I'm like, I like this tea that's being spilled, Selena.
Yeah,
I
do, I'm into
enjoy
it, too.
It. I enjoy it. Yeah,
I like that she's doing that.
I'm a real Selena Gomez fan, and I don't care who knows it.
Wait, but he's married now to
Haley Baldwin.
That's Stephen Baldwin's daughter.
Yes, the blonde Baldwin. Yes.
The very Christian Baldwin.
Yes.
That one, I met that Baldwin at Chapters, when I worked at Chapters.
How was he?
He was excitable.
Oh.
Him and a bunch of people were like talking about Jesus, and then also they were going to a movie, and they were all, it was like a year after 9/11, and so they were all wearing like New York Fire Department hats.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't have much more to say about that. I have helped a lot of celebrities in my book selling retail life, but I mean, some of them just aren't worth talking about.
Yeah, it's fine. I don't dislike Haley Baldwin. That's not even it. I don't care.
I honestly also same. No feelings.
No feelings.
So my first question, topic for discussion is what has changed in Canlit in the last decade?
Yeah, that's my first question too.
As always, we are insane.
You know what? There are a couple of things. One of the things I'm really excited to see is how people are not adhering to genre and that forms are more fluid and combined and messed up. And that's been a really exciting thing, because I think writers have always been doing that, but it's only now that the publishers are taking a chance on it in the last couple few years. And it's super exciting. It's exciting for me to read. It's exciting for me to like edit if I'm editing it. And there's been some really cool things that way. I think too that there's like, I think independent presses and their influence is growing. For whatever reason, I think there's probably all sorts of capitalist reasons for this, but, and I really enjoy how they're kind of shaping our reading culture, and cause it's an entirely different, perspective on what needs to be published, what needs to be disseminated, what needs to be marketed. And I think a lot of the independent presses too are taking chances on new voices, which is always, always exciting for me.
I actually think independent presses always have been, but they're still, in my opinion, the vanguard mm-hmm. of doing that.
Always.
I think that then that also though does lead to then the big houses coming in and like sweeping people up from those indies.
Indies
are constantly have to then be searching for new voices because they're not going to be able to always retain the talent.
Well, the big publishers are always coming in and taking or publishing people's sophomore books, right? That's their like MO.
I think that also has changed from people's first book being signed with the big press and that being a big thing. I think in the last decade, that was much more common.
Yeah.
Would you agree? And in the 90s.
Yeah.
For someone to get attention, for their book to be a big deal, it sells, and their first book is the big book. And then a lot of times, sophomore efforts weren't as, they weren't given the same attention, they weren't praised as much.
Just ask me.
Yeah, I mean.
The six people who read The Better Mother, bless you.
You sweethearts. But yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
But I think that's a change overall from like, you know, I think the influence is staying the same. Like indies are taking these chances, but I also think people are, I think that's the reversal is that, they're picking the sophomore books after someone has been sort mm-hmm. of given a chance, has entered the arena.
It's hard to argue with those contracts, but like, what else do you think has changed in the last 10 years?
I mean, I'm involved in it now, so huge change for me. And just for all of Canlit, I showed up, welcome to me. Is that a good answer?
Bum, bum, bum.
So going from involved to not involved is, I don't know, that feels big to me personally. But also, just to go back to talking about indies, I also think indies are, in a lot of ways, indies and independent bookstores, like those changes are sort of similar. Like 10 years ago, in 2010, I was laid off from the longest running independent bookstore in Vancouver. And at that time, the bookstores that had kind of made it through that first decade post Amazon, a lot of them started to close. But now things on that front have really changed.
They have.
So, you know, a lot of indie bookstores have opened in our city. We're seeing it in other cities. So we have Paperhound, Massey Books that are recent, I believe last decade.
Iron Dog too.
And I was just going to say it now, Iron Dog Books, which began as a book truck and has now got a brick and mortar space in other stores. You know, in Edmonton, we see Glass Bookshop just open. There's Knife Fork Book in Toronto. Toronto's always had a lot of indies, but just being able and to see, Type Books expanding, Drawn and Quarterly in Montreal expanding,
like so
those
exciting.
Types of things are exciting. And I think seeing new shops is huge, and they prioritize independent publishers, and I think that gives them more clout.
In
some ways.
Yeah.
You know, big publishers can get attention in big stores and have always been able to through co-op titles or a variety of different ways, and they can always get reviews, and lots of books published by big publishers are my faves. Big pub books are my faves all the time. But it's definitely so that, I think, remains the same, but they still have that sort of, like, marketing power.
Yeah.
But I think indies are definitely getting in there a lot more. I mean, we're seeing it, too, you know, with in the last few years, more books published by independent presses being shortlisted for awards.
Yeah, getting starred reviews in the Globe and Mail.
Getting starred reviews in Q&Q, yep, in Publishers Weekly.
Getting even like feature reviews in the Globe and Mail. I mean, yeah. Like there was the only book that I wrote that wasn't like a baby book that came out this year or that I didn't write about, whatever gets you through our anthology that I edited with Stacey Mayfowles, got really great coverage. And it's with Greystone. It's not a huge press.
Nope.
And it's not an easy topic to quote unquote sell. So it was, I was really happy to see that, you know, a big picture of me and Stacey May in the National Post and in like, we had a big review in the Globe and Mail and like, it was great. So that is happening too though, right? Like I think that the big media seem to know that they can't always be going to PRH, like to Penguin Random House or HarperCollins for their material. Right?
Yeah. Not every single time.
No.
Like there's actually a lot more going on. And I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that. And I think if indies are sort of, as you said, like in some ways leading the way or taking chances and big presses are then using like that as a way to, I don't know, let themselves be influenced, as mm-hmm. I guess how I'll word it. I think that's good. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think it's good for there to be, you know, they're just to be more of just more open-minded thinking overall going on in any of those processes. And I guess, again, in the last decade, there's way more podcasts, which I think is making a big difference overall. Like when we started, we were really the only game of canlit podcasts. Now you have,
all these
Element
kids.
Ampersand.
Yeah.
Penguin Random House has semi-pros.
Yep.
There's like BC and UConn Book Prizes have their own. Another local writer here has a Page Fright podcast.
That's
like
right.
There's a ton of people that want to talk about writing. And so we've seen in a bad change, fewer reviews overall,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fewer spaces for books to be talked about. So people finding these other methods like a podcast is great. And then of course, social media, big change.
Thank God with that. I mean, actually there's so much books coverage on social media and it actually does. I think it can really drive how your book does, how your book sells.
It certainly can raise awareness.
Yeah.
Even just a title existing.
Yeah.
Like, there's lots of things that I wouldn't know about at all if it wasn't for social media.
Yeah. If you, are you where you thought you'd be career-wise 10 years ago?
I made one goal.
Yeah.
And I accomplished it.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So this decade somewhat coincides with me turning 40, like the end of the decade. And I wanted to publish 5 books before I was 40 and I did.
That's a really impressive
goal. So now I have no goals and I have to figure out what new ones I want to make.
Let's make some goals.
Ugh.
No goals. We don't do goals anymore.
I just want to take a good poop again.
I am going to manifest. Eat some pineapple again.
I already ate several pieces. I started to get that pineapple mold, so I had to take a break.
Oh, you need a break.
Love pineapple, but I definitely am the person that will eat so much that I don't know what that's called. I've been calling it pineapple mold.
It's acid. You get the acid.
Yeah.
I get it from persimmons.
Oh, persimmons for sure too.
I mean, I think 10 years ago.
Yeah, what about you?
Well, 10 years ago, I wanted to be shortlisted for a big prize, which has not happened. But that was a goal. And then and not meeting that goal has been hard for me in a couple of ways. Only that I had to like truly understand that there's no control over what gets shortlisted for a prize, what doesn't get shortlisted for a prize, and that's okay. And I had to get to a spot where I was like, it's not about the quality of my work necessarily, although maybe it is. Like maybe it could be, and maybe I'm not doing as well as I should be doing.
No, lies.
No, it's okay. But
lies.
Like,
listen, there's definitely lots of books that are not as well written as yours that get shortlisted for awards. And this will come as a surprise to no one that is listening to this podcast.
No, I think that's true. I mean, I don't want to like, I'm not here to like run my own writing down because like, I believe in all of my books. I think my books, I'm happy with the way they turned out, but for whatever reason, they were not the type of writing that people wanted to award that year or whatever. There are a whole host of reasons. I think that, you know, it's been a long time between novels, so we'll see, but and that's okay. But it's just, I had to really come to terms with like, I can't control the prizes. I can't control the prizes for my friends. I can't do anything about it unless I'm on that jury. And then when you're on one of those big juries and you end up throwing books across the room, I'm not saying I did this, but I might have. Then like, what do you do? Like, it's, you're not going to get what you want either way.
How many times have you been a juror?
Like on a big prize?
Just any book prize.
Oh, gotta be book or writing, because I've done like the CBC one.
Just book.
Just book? Three.
Okay, how many other ones? Writing
like,
ones.
Like writing one? Probably another four or five.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but I don't do them anymore because they take up too much space, too much time. I will say one.
I just know you've done it a lot.
I've done it, and it's actually quite fun, but they don't pay you enough to do it. Like, it's not, you have to read too many books. So when I did the GG jury, it was 246 fiction titles, which was, well, you don't read them all. I mean, which is, well, you try to read them all, but you can't. They only give you 3 months to do it. Like, you can't, nobody can read that fast.
Yeah, that's an impossibility.
That's an impossibility. So the other thing is, like, what I am doing now that I never thought I would be was, I never thought I would be like this much of a political person, like publicly. I spent most of my life believing I was apolitical, which my best friend, Sandra Chu, who's been my best friend since 1991, would be like, that's bullshit, Jen. You were always a political person, but I was never publicly that. Not really. And then like sort of the last 5 or 6 years, it's gotten more and more, and to the point where I feel like certain things can happen in the news and I need to comment on, or people expect me to. And I didn't expect that. And I don't know if it's a good thing either all the time. Yeah. Is it a good thing, Dina? I mean,
I don't know. I mean, I think everyone should be doing more overall. And I think that one of the issues is we cannot rely on the same people overall every single time to be the ones that are taking things on. And I definitely am guilty of not, you know, taking on enough in ways that I think other people do. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I'm trying to be more mindful of, that I'm trying to think about, that I'm trying to be like, don't be a little shit coward about this. And I think more people need to be thinking that way. And whether it's speaking out or whether it's like doing something behind the scenes, whatever it is, I think we really do look to and rely on the same people way too frequently. And I think so. That, I mean, we've definitely seen this in any level, not just in the literary world, but overall, you know, people getting deified in a way that is complicated and stressful for them, and also makes them it impossible for people to either not be disappointed in them or not be able to criticize them.
Yeah, like nobody is above criticism, which is the other thing, and that we all make political choices, whether we know it or not.
Yeah, for sure.
And the problem with being so public about it is that people can see when you stumble, and that's a hard thing to have to deal with. Like,
yeah, for sure.
My own feelings, if I stumble, like I feel terrible. Like, it's self-loathing.
Oh my God, same.
Yeah. But then like the other thing I was thinking is like what I would like, you know, in the next 10 years is to do less of it on social media, which I find is, it can be challenging. You get your trolls and you're never going to be progressive enough for some people. You're going to be always too progressive for other people, and trying to turn what I care about into the work that I do, into the work that I, like the books that I write or the books that I edit or the support group that I start or whatever. And that feels much better to me. Like, I feel better about it. Like, I can whine and complain and online if I want, and anyone can do that, and you're totally entitled to do it. I don't care, and good for you if you want to. But like, I would whine and complain so much about like how Black, Indigenous, people of color online, I would whine about how, you know, publishing is not the same, and you know, the opportunities are not there. And I'm like, wait a second though, why don't I just start this? Why don't we just start the support groups? Information sharing, transparency is the name of the game with that one. Why don't I acquire this book by this new emerging Chinese Canadian writer, Dan K. Wu? By the way, his book is going to be, everyone is going to love it.
When's this out?
2021, I think.
Okay. All right.
But it's a collection of short stories. It's about life and love in contemporary China. It's super great. And there is a scene with a threesome in it, and it's the best threesome scene ever.
If you're not excited about this book now, I don't know what else Jen's going to be able to tell you to entice you without giving away the whole book, obviously.
And there's a lot of popos in this book that are like mean to people.
I love this book already.
But then they make you a beautiful, like, you know, dish of, you know, cuttlefish, spicy cuttlefish. And then what's not to love about your popo?
I love it.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, I would love to just read like a whole anthology about grandmas.
Ooh. Maybe we should edit one.
I mean, I know you love to edit an anthology, but I just feel like so many people have such great stories, fiction, nonfiction, whatever, poems. I love hearing about it.
We're going to do a granny anthology, everybody.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
It makes me think about Jessica John's poem, Kokum Is So Metal, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that poem.
It's one of the best poems. I think about that poem all the friggin' time. Yeah. So is there anything else personally that you think in your engagement with literature, anything on or your writing that has changed for you in the last 10 years?
In the last 10 years, I'm writing more genres than I thought I ever would.
Yeah.
Yeah. I started out as a novelist. Well, I actually started out in poetry, but then I stopped to write novels because I can't write novels and poetry at the same time. It doesn't work. My brain doesn't do that. So I wrote 3 novels in like 9 years or something dumb like that. And then, I started writing poetry again. So that's been a huge surprise and really lovely surprise. And, you know, Shadow List, fall 2020 coming for your eyeballs. That's been really nice. Writing the nonfiction has been a huge surprise because nonfiction, I dabbled in like journalism for years and magazine writing, but I didn't ever think I would write a book like that. So those books, super fan, also 2021 coming for your eyeballs.
Is that fall 2021 also?
No. It's
spring 2021?
Some 2021. Shadowless is fall 2020.
Oh, fall 2020 Shadowless.
Yeah.
That's 2021. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think there's a season assigned to Superfan yet for 2021 or if they're, you know, we'll see.
We'll wait.
Yeah.
We'll wait and see.
Because it's not finished yet. That's why.
We will wait and see.
It may never come out. You never know. It's fine. Yeah. What about you though, writing wise?
I really, thought I feel like I spent the last 10 years thinking I was gonna write a novel or rewrite my thesis novel, which I never did.
You don't have to.
I know I don't have to, but that's just something that I think about. But then I'm like, I don't know, it needs to be something else. A thing that I finally started to do, I'd say just in the last few years, that was a lot different from before, was like, I just stopped finishing books that I wasn't enjoying, which is, again, as a bookseller, as someone who was in school for a long time, and as somebody who just overall has like an overabundance of guilt, I just always felt like I had to. I was like, well, you started this and you have to finish it. And maybe just as a person who has like weird loyalty issues, but I don't. And it's great. It's great to abandon books and I feel great about it.
So most
of the books I've read in the past few years are books I've enjoyed and it's great because I allowed myself to move on to a new thing.
I started not finishing books when I was about 25. Like, and I remember the day that I was reading, I don't even remember what book it was, reading it, read 30 pages of it. And I'm like, I can't. And like, why am I forcing myself in this torture? Like, it's not, you know, for whatever reason, not necessarily even that the book is bad. It's just not your thing.
And it also might not be your thing at the time. Mm-hmm. There, you know, I've definitely heard from other people that you come back to a book years later and you're like, oh, this is the time I need to read this.
Yeah.
It was the right time for me.
Yeah. And sometimes you need to push past a certain point and you can't do it at that time. And, you know, I think for a lot of books, there's often the first like 30 pages can be a hard slog. And then there's usually like a magic moment at some point where you're hooked, and then that happens with a lot of books.
Yeah. Anyway.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Okay. Here's a question that's kind of stemming from that based on something else that I was just going to say about what we were just talking about, forcing yourself to finish a book, which I actually did do not that long ago. And it was for me unsatisfying, but were there any trends or things in the last 10 years that confused you or that you didn't get, where like something was a big deal or there was a certain mode of writing that you were like, I don't get this, or this isn't for me, or whatever it is? Cause that's something that I've been thinking about a lot
as I've been trying to
figure out the ways that I respond to things and don't.
I mean, I think I should term this like, I think that there have been novels, or maybe they're not always novels. Sometimes they're like memoir that are really short, that the number of words is really short. Like, you know, like typically when you think of book length prose, you're looking at, you know, somewhere between 70 to 100,000 or 120,000 words. And these books have been really short and there's been a lot of blank spaces on the page. And when those books started coming out, and I want to say it was maybe about 10 years ago right? When those types of books started coming out like more and more often. I guess there were always books like that, but just I saw them coming out more often. I had a really hard time with them initially. I don't anymore. But it was a hard sell for me in the beginning, right? And there were other sort of, there's a, the spec fiction stuff, the way it would hybrid with literary fiction, again, that was difficult for me at first, but not so much anymore. I love it now. So those are things like, I think I can get used to almost anything. Honestly, like form wise, I can accept almost anything, but it takes me time.
Yeah. I like that you talked about form. Like for me, I agree kind of, well, not with the first part. Like I feel like I've always been a little bit drawn to, I'm using air quotes, experimental fiction in some type of way. And I think that maybe that just has to do with always also being interested in poetry and wanting things to have, you know, like that type of hybrid, being interested in. But definitely with the spec fic too. Like I feel like I was a snob about it for way too long.
Yeah. And I think that's on
for
us
no
actually.
Reason.
Yeah.
Oh, it's for sure on me. And then once I started to realize, you know, sort of the breadth of what was happening, then I was like, oh yeah, no, I'm on board.
Yeah. And I just feel like I can accept any form eventually. It's just sometimes your brain has a block for that form for whatever reason, because of years of you not studying the opposite or for whatever, you know, thing. And like my personal preference has always been in terms of reading, any kind of prose specifically is messy, really full prose. That's always been my right readerly instinct. So trying to do the opposite is hard in some ways, but I think this is the thing I say to readers though, for anyone who's listening, you know, and feels like they've only been reading the same thing over and over again, is like really do try something that is a different form. And the wonderful thing about those books, by the way, that have a lot of blank space, is that you can read them really fast.
And I think it also allows for a different type of engagement.
Yeah.
And I think they can be just as immersive, but you do have to take these intentional breaks. It's the book is asking you to take that break.
And you should be taking them if you're a good and attentive reader.
Yeah.
I think that's been really, really sort of interesting to me. There have definitely been sort of themes or topics that I'm tired of in the last 10 years, you know, like that kind of, you know, Cottage on the Lake, Call of the Loon kind of Canley, which I think is being published less and less, which is very fascinating to me. And which is not to say that people aren't writing about rural Canada or small towns, because they certainly still are, but it's an entirely different way of doing it.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I think that there have been, I'm thinking of actually Miriam Taves in particular, sort of her trajectory of her work is that she's taken the writing of a small town to another place. And I think other writers have kind of gone on that path also.
Yeah, they're following that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, there's these kind of overall trends that spill, I think, into any English language or translated literature or whatever it is, like these trends that kind of catch hold. And it's just, I don't know. It strikes me as, I hope it makes people want to write more interesting things and not just replicate, because I know that that's still such a common thing for publishers to be like, this is a popular thing. We're going to make this happen. It's like how we had, you know, two long seasons of coloring books that we had to contend with.
Oh yeah. Really, really, really detailed, intense coloring
and then
books.
That ended.
Yeah.
And now you can like barely sell a coloring book and save your life.
I mean, fair.
Yeah.
I mean, I was not on board with that trend, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine, whatever.
I mean, if you like it, that's great.
Also, just like, get a pencil and just like draw a thing.
Yeah, draw something.
You can draw a thing.
You can draw something.
I believe in you. I want to see your drawings.
I believe the children are our future.
Or similarly, people trying to, I feel like this has been happening in the last 10 or so years, but like trying to find the next, you know, glass castle. It's like, who's had the worst childhood and how can we bring that to, instead of allowing the book to, you know, be good.
Yeah.
Just being like, quickly, let's rush this like traumatic experience into the world.
Who's writing about trauma? Come on. Yeah. Yay. You get a car. You get a car.
Climb on the train. Woo, woo.
Trauma.
But yeah, I feel like those types of trends are, we haven't escaped that.
No, and I don't know if you ever will, though. Yeah. Trauma writing you know.
Not, and trauma is one example, but yeah, like one thing hitting and then everyone's like, we got to hit that.
Oh, it was like when everybody was writing about their dogs. Like,
yes, yes.
Like, because exactly. That was like a real thing.
Exactly.
For like a long time. Or like when like straight, cis, white, divorced women were like going on like, you know, trips of discovery. Like
everyone's eat, pray, lovin'.
Everyone's eat, pray, lovin'. This is what I'm calling my new memoir, Superfan. It's going to be Eat, Pray, Love, but with Kardashians.
Sorry.
Market. That's my tagline.
Yeah. Quickly. You can use this recording to help promote.
Eat, pray, love, but with Kardashians.
Eat. Jen Sukfong Lee's Superfan. It's like Eat, Pray, Love. But with Kardashians.
That sells itself.
Yeah. I feel great about it. I feel great about it.
Okay. What are, do you think, underrated books of the last 10 years? Because I love to shine lights on underrated books.
I feel like I'm really bad at this. Because when we talked about this, I started to realize that I was forgetting things.
Oh, yeah.
And I felt bad. But for sure, I'm going to say... Friend of the podcast, former guest, Petal, Chelsea Rooney.
Oh, I should have said that one too.
It's super underrated. And same, friend of the podcast, former guest, Nancy Lee's The Age.
The Age.
These are two novels that I feel like they kind of, I think they also came out around-ish the same time. Maybe not quite, but within a few
similar
years of each other.
I think The Age came out maybe a year later.
No, they were like 20. I feel like they were both 2014, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, they weren't. Because I was on the jury for the GGs and I remember reading Petal. That okay, was in so consideration.
It was 2012. Or,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, actually.
Regardless, I feel like both of those books are just amazing examples of superb characterization, beautiful prose, and like extremely compelling narratives.
They're challenging books
they're
too.
Extremely challenging books.
They ask a lot of the reader, which I really love books like that, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm getting lipstick all over this mic.
That's fine.
It's fine. It's our mic.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly could say literally every single poetry book pretty much that came out that wasn't, you know, nominated for a single prize, like so many poetry books consistently get overlooked. And every year there's like one or two that get attention because that's all that there's really room for, you know?
Yeah. Like, can I,
and there are so few places for poetry reviews. I'm sad we're shutting down Poetry is Dead because we have 3 to 4 reviews, even though we only do it twice a year. Like that's still 8
and
reviews.
And those are good reviews. And they're reviews of books that don't get reviewed.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Often we really try to get books in. We do chapbook reviews every issue as well because chapbooks don't get reviewed as often. So that, yeah, overall, like the majority of Canadian poetry, extremely underrated and underread.
Okay. So one of my things.
Yeah. What are yours?
Okay. So one of my things is I like to think about memoir that people don't read because it's like, there's a lot of memoirs that suck up a lot of air.
Yeah.
But the one that I think.
This is another quote from Jen Sukfong Lee. There's a lot of memoirs that suck up a lot of air.
Hey. I'm not saying they're not good books because they often are very good books.
I'm not saying that either.
But the one that I think was criminally underrated is My Body is Yours by former guest, friend of the podcast, Michael V. Smith. One of the most beautiful memoirs. And what I love about it is it uses the illness and death of his father as the sort of structure to examine father-son relationships, but like masculinity and queerness and how he felt about his body and his changing relationship with his own body while his father's body is basically dying. So a fantastic memoir with a real structure and a real plot trajectory, which doesn't always happen. And I love that book and it should have won all the prizes. And I'm sorry it didn't because I was not on a jury that year. Otherwise I would have tried.
I've never been on a jury, so no one can blame me for shit.
Is it
my constant swearing that I'm not asked to be on juries?
No.
They're like, she's going to write us a bunch of F-bombs.
Everyone knows I swear.
I know, I'm still kidding. I'm 100% kidding.
I swore in a jury meeting.
I mean, I believe it, and I want to hear more about that.
Yeah, off mic, off mic. The novel that I think has been most criminally underrated in the last 10 years is Birdie by Tracy Lindberg.
Oh, what an amazing book.
I think she's a friend of the podcast. We should try to get her on the podcast.
I would love to get her on the podcast.
What I love about Birdie is that I think it's one of the most complete novels published in Canada in a really long time, because there's everything you want. There's humor, there's despair, there's music. There's so much music in that book. And it's really hard, I think, it's really hard to write music the way people experience music. And that's what she manages to do in Birdie. I don't know if people know this, but Tracy Lindberg is a jazz singer, or was. I got the inside scoop. She went to law school with my ex-husband.
What a multi-talented genius.
Yeah. And then I will only mention one more, which is Boo by Neil Smith. I love Neil Smith.
Oh, I haven't read Boo.
Oh, I love it. And it's the sort of book that like should have hit at that sweet spot of YA and adult literary sort of hybrid. And, you know, I had expected it to, it's easy. It's like super readable, but like on a whole other level, because it's this kid who dies and he's in the afterlife. And what is the afterlife like for kids? And it's fantastic. If you love spec, if you love YA, if you love things that deal with kids thinking about their own mortality, you want Boo by Neil Smith. That's what I'm saying.
I like that. I'm sure there's tons of stuff I'm missing, so I apologize. I literally, my brain stopped functioning and I was like, did you read any books? Like, did you ever read a book?
But what about favorite books, though? Not just underrated, because
I have so many favorites.
So many favorites.
Yeah. I got so many favorites. What about you?
I was thinking what was my one number one favorite, which is hard to quantify.
I don't think that I could. I'm terrible.
I'm going to try, which is not to say I didn't love a lot of books, but I'm going to try. And I think maybe my number one in the last 10 years was The Break by Katarina Vermette.
Oh, I mean, I would 100% put my cart behind that horse. It's an amazing
book. Former guest friend of the podcast.
Yeah. Former guest. One of my favorites. Yep. For sure. I mean, I know he is my best friend, but I feel like Everything's Awful and You're a Terrible Person did things that I want to do.
Also criminally underrated.
Super underrated.
Yeah.
Just overall, if you are a person writing in Canada and you think that you have to be dour and serious, that's fine. But if you want to be funny and you want to play with form, like, please do.
Yeah.
We love desperate for humor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yeah. Daniel's book has that. Carly Baker's Bad Endings has that. Like, humorous short stories 100% are my jam.
Yeah.
This year, Richard Van Camp's Moccasin Square Garden, like, those are the kinds of books I want to be reading.
What a dreamboat Richard Van Camp is.
Total dreamboat, sweetheart, great guy, big fan, love it. But yeah, I want to read these beautiful little books of short stories. They bring me untold joy. Quite a few years ago, Rebecca Lee's Bobcat and Other Stories.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to read your short... Wade Compton's Outer Harbor.
That is such a good book.
I need somebody who's not me, because I am not smart in this way, but I really would love someone to write about short fiction in Canlit.
There's a lot of really good short fiction.
Yeah, but like in the last, because I feel like short stories were so popular in the 90s and into the early aughts, and then they kind of went away, and now they're coming back, and it's very thrilling to me for that to be happening, because I friggin' love it.
Short stories are some of the best. Best to read, honestly.
Carrie Ann Leung's.
Oh, yeah.
Why can't I remember the title?
Not That Time I Loved You.
That Time I Loved You.
Yeah, The Time I Loved You.
Like, okay. Interconnected short stories. Rosie, you just, like,
she's yawning.
This is what I'm saying. More short stories, please.
Short story collections. I have one on here. Before You Were Born by Kate Cayley, which I love. Still love.
Oh, I got to read that.
It's so good. So, so good. And I want to also shout out, also, I should say Little Fish by Casey Platt.
Little Fish by Casey Platt is on my list.
We love Little Fish.
Love Little Fish. Yeah. And then again, like,
you also know, funny.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Also Sub Rosa. Amber Dawn. Sub Rosa.
Also
another,
funny.
Again, another one of those books that is, you know, a genre hybrid, beautiful.
It's so beautiful. Beautifully written.
What a beautiful fucking book.
I mean, take a paragraph out of Sub Rosa.
Yeah.
And compare it to any prose written in Canada. It's most of the time
just
better.
Just top shelf. I mean, a lot of books that we listed are small presses as well. Arsenal Pulp Press, we're big fans, of course. We love them. Lots of their books are great. So, Jen, what other questions do you have?
What would you like to see in the next 10 years in Canlit?
Oh, I have that too. Oh, wait.
Yeah,
before
do you?
That, before
yeah.
that, wait, I had one other question.
Yeah.
So what excites you that's happening now before we move on to the future?
What excites me? I'm really excited to, what I didn't realize with this sort of support group that we started, is that there are so many people writing so many good books and they're just not published yet. So I'm thinking that they're going to be, those books are going to come to editors and agents in the next couple of years. And how exciting to hear that that's happening. Like really exciting stuff that we have not seen in Canlit yet, you know, because these people are emerging and, you know, they're from, a lot of them are from like cultures or groups that haven't been given a lot of space in Canlit previous to this. So I'm really excited to see that. That makes me just feel great inside, bubbly, like an Alka-Seltzer.
Yeah, that's great.
What about you?
That's wonderful. One thing, of course, that I love is how many chapbook presses have come out in the last few years.
That's super cool,
it's
right?
It's really cool. It's super exciting. I love that poetry has been given, you know, these beautiful little books for us to enjoy. Of course, friends of the podcast, we want you to buy all the Rahila's Ghost books if you can. But overall, I just, it makes me really happy to see that happening because I think it's such a great way for people to potentially get their first publication, or if you haven't written poetry in a while, to, you know, send out your manuscript and hopefully that's another kind of entree for you as a writer to hopefully get published, or even as a reader to like have something, you know, that's contained in this small form that you could consume in just one sitting. Mm-hmm, like it's so, it's so, so, so lovely. And I also really love that it seems like people of different ages and generations seem to be interacting more in this way, that I don't remember seeing before. And not merely in mentor-mentee relationships. So I really like that.
Like peer-to-peer relationships.
Yeah,
it's nice to see.
It is. It's super nice to see. And I really love that. And because so many things are so regional, I think, still to this day, I really like that I feel excited by the fact that I don't know stuff that's happening and that I am going to get to discover it.
Yeah, that's always really exciting.
It is super exciting. So that for sure excites me. Rosie excites me. Hi, Rosie.
She's licking her lips at Dina.
Yeah. She's a great lady.
I actually have been seeing a lot of generosity too, just in general. Just people being really generous with their information, being really generous with like helping and just, you know, really trying to make space for people. Yeah. And like, that's awesome.
Yeah. I'm not going to say that there still aren't cliques, whatever, however that's interpreted, and that there aren't people who are still gatekeeping, but I really feel like 10 years ago, I did not think that there were so many people that I didn't think I would ever be able to talk to because my experience with other people was so negative that I felt very excluded just because I hadn't done enough and I hadn't proved myself, and that's fine, but also I didn't feel generosity. And so I'm glad that that's happening, and I really...
It's like the opposite of scarcity. And there was so much scarcity mindset 10 years ago.
And that was just because so many people wanted to hold on to what they had. They didn't want to share. And not sharing information is just rude.
It's rude.
It's rude.
It's okay to talk about what your contract looks like. It's okay.
It's also okay to be, you don't have to be best friends with anyone.
No.
But you can say hi to them at an event or a party, or not make them feel like, you know, they should go home and
like cry in the bathtub.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember feeling like that. Yeah. That's awful.
And I think that is a problem. And I really hope that I never change and act like a complete dick. Let's go back to that question.
What do you want the next 10 years in Canlit to look like?
Okay. I want there to be free lipsticks in every swag bag at literary festivals.
Yeah.
I want, what do you want?
What do I want? I just want to write another novel someday.
Oh, see, I can't even think personally because I feel like I am so blocked in terms of what I want to do that I can't, I don't, as I said earlier, I can't have personal goals. I don't know what they are.
I mean, I'm saying I want to write another novel in the next 10 years. I don't think that that's like super, I think I could do it.
That feels like a big commitment to me. As a person who tried for the last 10.
I would like to stop being the Susan Lucci of Canlit. That's a personal goal.
I mean, I also, like, I only want Jen's dreams. I'm done having dreams. Mine are over. We're done. No more things for me. I only want Jen's dreams to come true.
I mean,
maybe I become Jen's personal assistant.
I mean, I have a dog bed available for you at any time.
You know it.
Should you want to sleep on it? I want Rosie to be happy and healthy for the next 10 years.
Me too.
What did I write here? I actually wrote a serious thing. I would love to see a real integration of formerly marginalized groups in all areas of publishing, from editors to publicists to salespeople, all up and down that.
100% agree.
All throughout our corporate culture.
I agree. That,
don't, Rosie's trying to climb on the table because there's cheese, guys.
Rosie, come down here. Rosie.
If you want to chew your butt, that's fine, Rosie. Just don't do it on my lap.
Yeah, move your butt out of Jen's space. She's being weird.
She's like, that's enough podcast.
So I also have a little thing here that I made. It's called the Rage Minute Gift Guide.
Oh, you did. Oh, I didn't write an emotion corner
one. It's just a gift guide.
Okay. Rage Minute Gift Guide.
Yeah. So these are some gifts you can do. There's some free ones and some that cost money.
Okay.
But it's all rage based.
Yay.
So don't buy books by known abusive authors.
That's a free one. You don't have to buy them. It's free.
You don't have to buy them.
That's a
gift.
Just
don't do it.
That's a gift to the world.
And that's a gift to everyone. Yeah. You should donate to the Galloway Defense Fund for people who are being sued. You should also donate to Gwen Benawe's facial feminization surgery fundraiser. Mm-hmm. You should buy any of the books suggested here today or any by people we've had on the podcast. This year, and go to your local bookstore if you're lucky enough to have one near you and ask them to order them for you so you are not supporting a company that doesn't let their employees go to the bathroom and all the other terrible stuff they do.
If you see a copy of The Better Mother, buy it.
Yeah, buy it.
Be the seventh
first
person.
Hand, second hand, wherever you find it. Okay, here's a free gift. You can steal your friends' phones and subscribe them to this podcast.
Yay!
And any other literary podcast that we've talked about or any podcast in general that you like. It's a great gift for them that they will get to discover anytime they open their phone to their podcasting delivery service.
They get to hear us sing.
And last but not least, indoctrination. Please force a non-writer friend to come to a literary event.
Oh.
It's a great gift for everyone.
I mean,
just do it.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that bad.
Really not.
They actually discover things.
Yeah. They might buy a book.
Yeah.
They might meet people they like.
Yeah.
They might get to go home with someone and touch their sex parts.
Oh.
That's maybe a different gift. I'm just trying to entice people. Everyone at literary events is so horny, baby.
That could be true.
That was the worst Austin Powers impression, and I loved it.
Was that Austin Powers?
Yeah, I was just, it was very bad. So anyway, I have great ideas. Hi, Ro. Jen.
Dina.
Do you have anything else you want to say before we shut down this year, this decade, this podcast?
I will say the last 10 years have been very dramatic. Lots of bad things have happened, but lots of really good things too.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping that these next 10 years, we all make a commitment to not having any more bad things happen, if we can.
And if bad things do happen, let's be supportive of each other.
Yeah.
Let's take care of the people that need it.
Yeah. And then I think one thing I would really love to see less of is just complaining and trash talking about people doing things even when they're trying to be good.
You know what? I hope I write one book.
You will.
In the next 10 years.
You will. You will.
One.
Rosie is snorting her agreement.
One. Okay.
Be forgot. It all is really love. Rosie, Rosie, Rosie.
Thanks for listening. We love you.